Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Sometimes academic papers can be so obscure and full of complicated sentences that it can read like gobbledygook. And sometimes it is gobbledygook. James Lindsay and Peter Boghassian are both academics but deliberately wrote a paper that didn't make any sense. And it got published. The paper is called The Conceptual Penis as a Social Construct. James, good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon.
What is the basic thesis, if it's possible to describe that, of the conceptual penis as a social construct?
The hoax itself,
yes.
Is that penises don't really exist, but they cause all of our problems.
Right, including climate change.
Especially probably climate change.
Yeah. Tell us something about how you put it together, because even though there's a kind of a sentence there that makes sort of sense, it doesn't sound like you actually set out to write a thesis so much as you just grabbed various phrases from various places.
That's more or less the idea. So we skimmed through or glanced at or read a small volume of literature coming out of the gender studies field and saw the kind of style, which we later learned is sort of a style based on Michel Foucault and Judith Butler's style of analysis, but we didn't know that at the time, and just kind of cobbled together a large amount of nonsense that mostly blamed all of our problems on penises. The majority of the rhyme and reason behind it was mostly to try to make it funny,
right,
rather than to make it serious in any substantive way.
Yeah, and you also had a rule, did you, that if you read something and it made kind of sense, then you take that bit out.
Or we would add something internally contradictory to it. So, for instance, we might say that something was situated within a discourse and then decide that made sense if we knew what those words meant. So we'd say that it was situated within the discourse and outside of it at the same time.
Yes, or pre-post-patriarchal society.
Exactly.
And I'm just actually going to read a little bit of it just to give some of the listeners a flavour. We conclude that penises are not best understood as the male sexual organ or as a male reproductive organ, but instead as an enacted social construct that is both damaging and problematic for society and future generations. The conceptual penis presents significant problems for gender identity and reproductive identity within social and family dynamics, is exclusionary to disenfranchised communities based upon gender or reproductive identity, is an enduring source of abuse for women and other gender marginalized groups and individuals, is the universal performative source of rape, and is the conceptual driver behind much of climate change. So basically the penis is to blame for everything. Who did you first submit the article to?
A small journal called Norma, the International Journal for Masculinity Studies, which has the right name for what we wrote, it seemed like, and has also published other papers that are pretty close to equally ridiculous about phallic masculinity and other similar topics.
Right. Okay. But they rejected it.
They did.
And did they give you a basis on which they'd rejected it?
No, they did not. Not until subsequent to the entire huge international attention that it gathered, at which point they said, oh, we thought it was nonsense. And then we accidentally automatically forwarded it to a sister journal who decided to publish it.
Aha. Now, but did they recommend you go to the sister journal, or did you just do that yourselves?
Oh, they did. This is what we thought was the most interesting and possibly damning part of the publication. Once it had come to the fact that we chose this sister journal that's smaller, that had a open access status, we realized there were going to be complicating variables. But what made the situation really ugly was that the allegedly legitimate journal internally forwarded. They offered to forward our paper to another journal that's their sister journal. They did it all internally. All I did was approve. Yeah, go ahead, forward it. I sent an email to that effect, and that was all I had to do.
Mm.
And it was all done in-house. So we thought that it was pretty telling that there's some kind of flaw going on in the academic publishing situation where they will forward a clearly bad paper to another journal until they find somebody who will take it, and therefore that they can, you know, possibly make profit off of that or whatever their motives are.
Is that the key difference here, really, that Norma wouldn't have charged you to publish it, but the sister publication, Cogent Social Sciences, does charge to publish it?
Well, I can't speculate for sure what their motives are, but it seems that there are a number of problems in academic publishing, and it's hard to pinpoint which one it is. For instance, there's a publish and perish attitude, or publish or perish, I should say, attitude with academic publishing for people to keep their jobs or earn tenure. So there's a high pressure on academics to publish papers at pretty much any cost just to get them published. So it could be feeding into or exploiting that situation. It could just be something approaching a courtesy, if we want to be charitable to their motivations, to try to get papers directed from one journal to another in order to maximize the possibility that an academic can get published. But it could also be a profit motive or something along those lines. Now, the Norma claimed it was an accident, that they didn't mean to forward it and didn't realize that they were automatically forwarding papers to sister journals, which seems, I mean, I can't speak to their internal practices, but it seems like a fairly large oversight to not know what's happening when you reject a paper.
Cogent Social Sciences, though, the sister publication, they checked your sources, and your sources were all made up.
Well, not all of them. Five out of 16 were made up.
But they said they were all sound, I think is the word.
They said that they were sound, yes.
Did they make any suggestions as to how to improve your paper?
They did. They made a few small suggestions about including more examples to make the argument were more robust. They pointed out that we had failed to use a type of analysis we mentioned in the abstract because we didn't know what it was, and we just made things up as we went. So we didn't realize this should have been the red flag that something was amiss. So I just went to Wikipedia and found out what that type of analysis is and made up phrases that sounded kind of like what it says on Wikipedia and stuck them in the paper, and then the reviewer that had claimed we failed to use it was satisfied that we had used it. But that's an interesting point, because that means the reviewer read the paper carefully enough to realize that we had left out a analysis tool and recommended that it either be removed from the abstract or included into the paper. So this person knew what they were talking about and had read the paper carefully, and that's not a good sign for something.
Yeah. And so did you have to pay for it to be published?
Well, we were supposed to, but they actually had, I assume, an honest error and pushed the publish button before they sent the invoice. So it got published on a Friday morning, and they did not send the invoice. Well, I guess it's because Cogent's based in the UK, it would have been Friday afternoon there. And so on a Friday afternoon right before the weekend, they accidentally, I'm assuming, pushed publish, and then Monday morning they sent the invoice. But at that point, it had already been revealed to be a hoax, and so I just fessed up and said, this is a hoax, and they said, well, you don't have to pay the fee. But we had already obtained funding from an independent donor and had it ready to go, and they had expected – I mean, I had agreed to pay, but I never actually had to pay, and then they waived the fee once they found out that we had tricked them.
Did they take it down?
They did take it down. They took it down pending a review, and – then formally retracted the paper about a month later.
I suppose part of the point is just about the rigor or lack thereof that can happen in the academic publishing world. Are you also, though, trying to make the point that gender studies is nonsense?
Well, yes, actually. And that's a careful point to make, because there's a lot going on in gender studies. There's legitimate studies or legitimate questions. There are scholars that study gender who hedge very closely to what the best science says. And then there are other scholars who adhere to a constructivist view of human behavior that utterly reject what science is saying and have been doing so for decades and continue to do so despite having been shown wrong, but despite having been demonstrated to possess ideological bias and blinkering by good analyses, and continue to ignore this. And of course, you see the exact same manifestation of this week with the memo from Google to tie it to a current event. You see exactly this argument that the author of that memo asserted that there may be biological, or that there are biological differences on average between men and women, and that particular view is being absolutely excoriated. In fact, it was being denounced rather than debated, denounced rather than discussed. And so that's sort of the motivation that led, not the Google memo, obviously you couldn't have done it because it just happened, but events like that across universities, United States, UK, both, all over the place, have had similar events to where this 100% nurture, if you will, view of human gender is promoted as the only way to think about gender, and anything else is sexist, and anything else is misogynist, and anything else brands you unqualified to engage in debate or have a job. Mm. They chase people out of their professions, as has just happened at Google, not just at universities, as has happened to Nobel laureates like Tim Hunt for making an off-color joke. You saw the thing about the T-shirt probably with Matt Ridley for the ESA. So this is a very large problem. And whether gender studies is nonsense or not is sort of beside the point. What's ultimately at the point is, why is gender studies situated such that there are people trying to have an earnest discussion with thousands of scientific studies backing them up, and those people are being denounced and decried and rejected out of hand, without debate, without discussion, without conversation? Meanwhile, what you see is hysterical witch hunts of individuals who are trying to have the discussion from the other side. So something's fundamentally broken. There's clearly a massive problem going on, and that massive problem is ultimately what we were hoping to draw attention to by hoaxing a gender studies journal.
Yeah, so there's a political point here as well.
There is, yeah.
Would you be able to say sexism doesn't actually exist, that it's just used as a slur to shut people up?
Well, I mean, I live in the southeastern United States. It would be ridiculous to say that sexism doesn't exist, that it's been totally eradicated from the world. And I see it. So, I mean, it's not something that I do anything to engage in, but it's around me all the time. In the southeastern United States, there are some fairly regressive views. As a friend of mine that visited once from the Czech Republic said, coming here is like going back in time about 35 years. Mm. So, it does still exist. I'm not going to say that sexism doesn't exist. However, what we should be doing is having an honest conversation about what parts of gender differences are sexism, which parts are not sexism, and just are the results of free adult people making choices as they will. And we can research why people might make those choices on average or in aggregate, but leave it down to the individual rights of every man or woman to do as they will, hopefully as free from discrimination as is possible.
James, thanks very much for talking to us today. James Lindsay is a mathematician, author of four books, also a co-author of The Conceptual Penis as a Social Construct. James, thank you very much for talking to us.
Cheers. Have a good day.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.